This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
We've got Apple, Mary Poppins, and some good old-fashioned radio. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. From Washington, D.C., I'm Kimberly Adams in for Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday, the 13th of December. Good to have you here. We start with Apple. The company announced today it's planning to build a new $1 billion campus in Austin, Texas, less than a mile from its current one. Apple says it will also build new sites in three West Coast cities, putting it on track to add 20,000 jobs in the next 5 years. That's a lot of new jobs, which reminded us of another big jobs announcement from another big tech giant that looked very different. Marketplace's Marielle Segura reports.
Usually when a big company wants to build a new outpost, it makes a list of cities that have the stuff it needs, access to highways and ports, skilled workers. Then the company reaches out to those places and negotiates. Lee Winter is principal at WRE Consulting.
They may ask things like, what are you willing to do in terms of giving us an exit off the highway or teaming with their, local colleges?
We don't know exactly how Apple came to its decisions on Austin or the other cities. The company didn't respond to our requests for comment today. But we do know it took a much more private route than Amazon. Amazon recently capped off a very public competition for its so-called second headquarters. J.P. Gounder at Forrester says that got Amazon a lot of criticism, especially about the tax incentives it's getting.
I think it really opened up the debate in a way that people started to see how this game is played with large companies. And I don't think ultimately that did any favors to Amazon's reputation.
Amazon is also getting backlash because of how the process went. Competing for something like a tech company's campus costs a city a lot of time and money. Tom Stringer is managing director at BDO USA.
I would think as a municipal official, I would think you'd appreciate maybe the Apple approach a little bit more just because your chances of winning it, the odds are just certainly much higher.
Amazon's competition brought in more than $2 billion in tax incentives. Apple's private approach netted at least $25 million. I'm Marielle Segura for Marketplace.
Every day, it seems, somebody is out there warning about a coming recession, pointing to rising interest rates, a slowing housing market, that unpredictable trade war. Look, no one really knows. But now you can add the chief financial officers, CFOs, of American companies to the watch list. A new survey by Duke University finds just under half of them guess we'll be in a recession by the end of next year. More than 80% think one's coming by 2020. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more.
Until recently, chief financial officers have been pretty upbeat, says Duke finance professor John Graham.
The U.S. domestic economy has been growing strongly, and so there haven't really been signs until now coming directly out of the C-suite that we might be nearing the end of this long, robust growth period.
Now, pause, breathe deeply. When this long growth period does end, it's not likely to be anywhere near as bad as the Great Recession, which sounded like this on our show 10 years ago.
Since the recession started a year ago, this economy has lost 7,500 jobs every single day.
Moody's chief economist Mark Zandi tracked that recession. He's not so worried this time.
That was cataclysmic, near-death experience for the financial system. This is likely to be a much more typical kind of economic downturn.
Zandi does think there's a good chance of recession in the next couple years as labor shortages develop, wages rise, and the Fed tries to slow things down. But a recession isn't inevitable, says Betsy Stevenson at the University of Michigan.
Economic booms do not die of old age. What normally causes some kind of downturn or recession, there's some kind of shock, something that goes wrong.
Stevenson thinks the most likely thing to go wrong now is actually the slowing global economy, disrupted by trade wars, hurting U.S. companies and workers. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And in case you missed it on Tuesday, Kai had a fascinating interview with the guy whose job it is to actually determine when we really are in a recession. That's online at marketplace.org. And a mixed day on Wall Street. Details are coming up when we do the numbers. British Prime Minister Theresa May went to Brussels today. On the agenda, getting EU leaders to make it easier for the UK to exit the economic bloc. But nothing about Brexit has been easy. Yesterday, May survived a vote of no confidence by British lawmakers, but the withdrawal plan she's negotiated is still really unpopular and complicated. Brexiters, Remainers, trade deals, backstops, borders, even the Brits can't keep up. To catch us up, I'm joined from London by Marketplace European Bureau Chief Stephen Beard. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Kimberly.
Tell us briefly, where are we even in this Brexit process now?
In as big a mess as ever, Kimberly. Parliament clearly thinks that May's exit deal stinks. And her only chance of getting it approved here is if she can persuade the EU to soften this so-called Irish backstop, a measure which is designed to ensure that there's no hard border between the British province of Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic in the south after Brexit. But the EU has repeated until it's blue in the face, the backstop stays, it must be legally enforceable. This is the only deal on offer to the UK. So, well, that's where we are. I mean, stasis is a polite way of putting it. Paralysis is probably more accurate.
So it's unlikely that May is going to be able to get a better deal from the EU. There's a ton of infighting in Parliament. So it seems like there's a real risk that Britain is just going to crash out of the bloc without a deal. How damaging would that be for the UK?
We've had all sorts of lurid predictions. I mean, the Bank of England and the UK Treasury recently painted a particularly grim picture of the possible outcome. And they talked about 8% contraction in the economy, unemployment doubling, house prices falling. It's not just the UK authorities that have been predicting that. The IMF and the OECD have joined in this chorus of woe. Brexiteers, however, say this has all been ludicrously exaggerated. The truth is, we don't know what the damage could be. Many businesses are fearful, and it's worth noting that many even hardline Brexiteers would prefer a trade deal with the EU to a no deal. So obviously, there would be some damage.
So really quickly, we just talked about how it might affect the UK and Europe more broadly. What about here in the US?
Well, again, it depends on whether the doomsayers are right or not. I mean, it's safe to say that the prospects for the whole global economy don't look particularly rosy at the moment. The US-China relationship is far, far more important, a much bigger cause for concern than Brexit. But the UK is the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world. It's a big trading nation. If there is mayhem here after Brexit Day, it will be one more thing the world and the US will have to worry about.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you, Kimberly.
This has been a good year for the movie business. Really good. Thanks in part to people like me who saw, say, Black Panther more than once. Stories of struggling singers and post-apocalyptic worlds packed theaters too, and helped push box office receipts past the $11 billion mark, record territory. And the year's not over yet. Next week, Mary Poppins returns. Marketplace's Renata Sego reports.
2018 has been the mighty superhero that rescued the movie industry from the villain that was 2017, when box office sales hit a 25-year low. Revenue this year is 10% ahead of last year. One reason is Black Panther. It started 2018 off strong.
What happens now determines what happens to the rest of the world.
They powered the biggest month of February ever.
That's analyst Paul DeGarabedian with ComScore. He says then came the biggest April, powered by the Avengers, then the biggest June and September and
October.
The biggest. You get the point. And you could see what kind of movies hit the mark this year at marketplace.org. Heather Torres teaches entertainment business at Full Sail University. She says this year's slate of action-packed movies made people want to watch on the big screen.
Rather than just sitting at home and watching something on your couch, they're able to go out, experience the movie with amazing sound.
Another reason for Hollywood's big year? Big chains like AMC giving facelifts to theaters, and moviegoers enjoying more perks like reclining chairs, wine, and hot food delivery. Patrick Corcoran is with the National Association of Theater Owners.
You have people who may not have come for a while. They, you know, you hear a lot of responses like, wow, this is what a theater is now.
Add to that, average ticket prices went up slightly, which adds to box office revenue. Most of that revenue goes to the big studios. Theaters make most of their money off concessions. I'm Renata Sego for Marketplace.
Mary Poppins, by the way, was a book adaptation. It's a business model Hollywood loves, and we explain how it works at marketplace.org. Coming up,
it's entertaining if you really just listen to it.
The joy of call-in radio with a dash of commerce. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 70 points, a quarter of a percent, to close at 24,597. The NASDAQ lost 27 points, three-tenths of a percent, to finish at 7070. And the S&P 500 was flat. It ended at 2650. We told you about the different ways Apple and Amazon are expanding their corporate footprints. Apple polished up 1%. Amazon was down three-tenths of a percent. But Microsoft was up three-tenths of a percent. On to Hollywood. Yes, it was a blockbuster year for the big screen. Black Panther distributor Walt Disney was up 1%. Bonds held steady. The yield on the 10-year T-note stayed at 2.91%. You're listening to Marketplace.
We do more than the numbers here at Marketplace. You know, we tell the stories behind the numbers, stories of real people, of businesses, both big and small, and of the impact the economy has on each of us. Because you appreciate this kind of public service journalism, we're asking you to give something back. Please donate today at marketplace.org, and your gift will go twice as far thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kimberly Adams. Now to another complicated trade story, this time in our own backyard. Earlier this year, Congress passed legislation to establish export controls for emerging technology, potentially limiting American companies from selling certain tech abroad, tech that could be used to threaten national security. But deciding which technology should be restricted can be tricky, Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson reports.
Bill Nordgren runs a software company in Utah, and he actually heard about the possibility of new export controls from a distributor he works with in China.
I think what had happened was one of our competitors picked up on it, and then they're using it already as a marketing campaign.
Saying to the distributor, hey, work with us instead. That American product, it might not be available here anymore. Nordgren's company, Flexim, makes 3D simulation software.
Allows you to build a factory or a process line on a computer and animate it.
Like a SimCity version of your factory. You can see how it'd react to changes, like adding an extra machine before you actually do it.
For example, Tesla uses our software to simulate their automotive manufacturing lines.
Exports make up about half of Flexim's business. Nordgren doesn't think of simulation software as an emerging technology. His company's been developing it since 1993. But it's a kind of logistics technology which is on the list the Commerce Department is reviewing to see if they should be subject to export restrictions. That could mean requiring companies to apply for a license to be able to sell abroad. At this point, the list includes broad categories like artificial intelligence, biotech, robotics. Ed Black is the president of the Computer and Communications Industry Association.
It is, in fact, potentially very sweeping and could impact, depending on how it evolves, a very wide number of companies, industries, and a big part of the economy.
It's still really early in this process, so it's hard to know what any export controls might look like in the end, how much technology they may actually cover. One thing the government will look at is how widely available these technologies are outside the U.S.
Often, the key factor is whether or not you have the ability to exclusively control the product.
Another factor, how export controls might affect the development of new technologies. Black says American firms benefit from global markets and interacting with scientists and competitors around the world.
If you try to bottle it all up, you may stifle the innovation, growth, and knowledge inherent. And therefore, you actually hurt your ability to stay avant-garde because you're not interacting and learning from others.
Figuring out where to draw the line, what emerging tech to protect, can be really hard. Andy Scheuer is a trade lawyer with the law firm Sidley Austin.
It's breathtaking in its aspirations. Whether it will end up with a broad set of new restrictions, we just don't know.
This process isn't exclusive to China, but Scheuer says it's largely driven by fears that China will gain access to U.S. technology and use it against us. Technology, he says, is the main battleground of the ongoing U.S.-Chinese trade war, the one that really matters.
This is the trade war, not the tariffs per se. The focus on tariffs seems so old-fashioned. You know, it's about widgets. When you think about real value in the economy is really based on technology. And so the movement of technology is, I think, much more likely to define winners and losers going forward than the application of border restrictions on goods.
And while tariffs have come directly from the White House, these export controls were a congressional initiative. One Scheuer says predates the Trump administration and will likely outlast him as well. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Like Mitchell was saying earlier, just thinking about another recession can be terrifying because for many people, the only recession we've experienced was the financial crisis a decade ago, and it shaped the way we think about the economy. All year for our Divided Decade project, we've been asking you for your stories about how you changed. Today, 42-year-old Che Riddell Tabasola of Washington, D.C.
It's funny. It was not that long ago, but it feels like it was a lifetime ago. In 2008, my husband Ted and I both lived in D.C., and we both had professional company jobs. And then the recession started happening. Both of our companies had gone through a round of layoffs that we both survived. And I remember one morning, the phone rang, and Ted looks at me and he says, "That's it. My number's been called." They asked him, "Who on the team do you think we should keep?" And for Tad, you know, he's a very kind-hearted person. That was actually worse than facing a layoff himself. We knew we had to make a change, right? We had wanted to open up a little brick-and-mortar restaurant. But downtown D.C., you're not going to do that for less than $1 million. And, of course, nobody was lending. And so after, you know, scratching our head and trying to think what to do, we started taking a look at food trucks. We purchased our food truck for $65,000, and by opening day, April 1st, 2011, we'd spent about $98,000 to get the business going. At the very beginning, it was kind of neat. Tad made all the food, and I would help, and we would touch every piece of food that came off that truck, which was really meaningful and special to us. The financial crisis created a marketplace of aspiring restaurateurs who could no longer access capital. And the recession also contributed to what was already happening, which was you had a marketplace of consumers who are chain weary, right? They want innovative, new, fresh ideas. And at the same time, they want the food affordable. So those two things really intersected and created a sweet spot for the modern food truck movement to blossom. I think for me, you know, I graduated high school in 94, and I still in the back of my mind was thinking that I was going to get that great job, work my way up in the company, retire 30, 40 years with a watch. And it really took those wake-up calls in 2008 to say, like, wow, no, that is not how the world is anymore. What's funny is that I think folks think of entrepreneurs as great risk takers, but the riskier proposition would have been waiting to get laid off. It was far less risky to go out, open your own business, and really be masters of your own universe.
Last year, Che and his husband, Tad, finally got that brick-and-mortar restaurant, the Barbecue Bus Smokehouse in the Brightwood neighborhood here in Washington, D.C. You can see photos of Che and Tad and their barbecue bus on our Instagram page. We're at MarketplaceAPM. And while you're there, tell us your story. The hashtag is HowWeChanged. Long before online classified sites like Craigslist or auction sites like eBay, there was something called Tradio, trading on the radio. People buying and selling their gently used goods by calling in to a show. You might think e-commerce would have made these shows obsolete, but in some small towns, a few Tradio programs are hanging on, airing on stations in Dansville, New York, or Kernville, California. Marketplace's Andy Euler ventured a couple of hours out from his base at KUT in Austin to bring us this story.
People in the Texas hill country town of Brady love to tell you that it's the geographic center of the state. It feels like everything in town is the Heart of Texas something. Heart of Texas Ford. Heart of Texas Country Music Museum. The heart of the Heart of Texas? It might just be the local radio station.
This is KNEL, 95.3 FM, 1490 AM in Brady. We're live online at KNEL Radio.
It seems like everyone in this town of about 6,000 listens. And there's one program in particular on at 9 o'clock every morning that many here say they almost never miss. Trading on the Radio.
Yes, sir. I've got some hay for sale. $95 a bale delivered.
You find KNEL in Brady's town square. I dropped in to see Tradio in action. The show's host, Tracy Pidcox, is behind the mic, wearing a big belt buckle and rust-colored cowboy boots. He's in his mid-40s. Says Tradio's been around for a long time.
77, 78, something like that, is when we started the program. But it wasn't nothing new to us. We stole it from somebody else.
There's no definitive history of Tradio. Many say it started in Seguin, Texas, a three-hour drive from Brady. Tradio was a natural for small-town radio stations, and it spread across the country. When today's Trading on the Radio show is over, Pidcox says he wants to introduce me to a guy who listens every day. So we hop into his pickup truck to pay him a visit. This guy's a big Tradio fan, even knows the call-in numbers by heart.
325-597-2119. I got it.
That's John Campbell. He's about 6'2 and thick as a tree trunk. Goes by the name of Big John. Says it right there on his camouflage hat in bright orange letters. He's bought and sold a lot of stuff on Tradio for the last 28 years. But these days, why doesn't Big John just use the internet?
Look, Craigslist and those things, they kind of get messy sometimes.
He says there's just something more personal about calling someone up after hearing their voice on the radio. He says he never misses a show, even if he's not buying or selling. He wants to know what people in town are up to. Tradio's kind of his gossip column.
It's entertaining if you really just listen to it.
Tradio is entertaining. Some recent items offered for sale on Tradio and Brady: billy goats, a 12-gauge shotgun, a John Deere backhoe. You never know what you're going to hear. Like when this woman called in while I was at KNEL.
I have two pair of gently worn ostrich boots for sale, size 9.
Pidcox and I hop back into his pickup to see the boots. We're at 85-year-old Lindell Smith's place, a 50s-style ranch house. She greets us at the door.
My husband passed away in February, and he had some boots. So I just called, and this man that is here right now called me and asked if he could come try them on.
Inside Lindell's house, there's a man sitting at her big dining room table trying on the brown boots, named Curtis Stroop. He's in his 70s. Seems to like the boots.
I think I'm going to buy both pairs.
A little more than an hour after she had called in, Lindell had sold her husband's boots, $50 per pair. Yep, lots of stories on Tradio, even if the listener sometimes has to imagine the plot. KNEL's Tracy Pidcox.
Somebody called in and they had an old stagecoach one time, which I thought, you know, why would you have a stagecoach?
No word on what became of that stagecoach. And there's no telling how long buying and selling stuff on the radio will be around in the age of e-commerce. For folks in Brady, Texas, though, Tradio is part of what makes their town feel like a community. And they hope it sticks around for a long time to come. In the heart of Texas, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
And this final note on the way out, a little story about supply and demand. Remember on Tuesday that Oval Office meeting to discuss how to avoid a government shutdown and the on-camera conversation turned, to put it mildly, a bit tense? You'd think it would be tough to top that display, but it seems the likely next House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, did. With that coat. Red, mid-length, high collar. You should see some of the memes on social media. People scoured the internet for the coat, only to learn it was discontinued in 2013. But fashionistas don't despair. The company, Max Mara, says it will reissue the coat in several colors next year. We gotta go. Today, the Dow gained 0.25%, the NASDAQ fell 0.3%, and the S&P 500 remained unchanged. Amir Babawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Heron Bekela, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is Deidre Depke, and I'm Kimberly Adams. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.